గురవే నమః. నమః ఓం విష్ణుపదాయ కృష్ణపృష్ఠాయ భూతలే శ్రీమతే భక్తి వేదాంత స్వామీ నితి నామినే నమస్తే సరస్వతి దేవే గౌరవాణీ ప్రచారిణే నిర్విశేష శూన్యవాదీ పాశ్చాత్య దిశతారిణే శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధార్ శ్రీవాసాది గౌరభక్తవృంద హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే హరే, హరే రామ హరే రామ 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 హరే హరే. These are a series of prayers I offered. I'll just translate the first one, the first prayer that I offer, which is quite relevant to what my very dear God brother Jagat Purush Prabhu explained. This prayer means or explains that I was born in the darkness of ignorance. We all are born in ignorance. But my spiritual master very mercifully opened my darkened eyes by imparting the transcendental knowledge. The knowledge of the reality beyond our sense perception. And he enabled me to experience the real purpose of my existence. Therefore, I offer my humble respects, obeisances unto him. When Jagat Purush Prabhu was speaking, I was thinking he should just continue to speak because he was explaining everything. Actually, that's why we are here. You all are here, I am here, we all are here just to understand that knowledge that he was already imparting. The source from which I have derived my understanding and knowledge, from the same source he also has received this knowledge. Therefore, we are actually on the same platform. Whatever I speak, he also speaks the same truth. Whatever he speaks, I also try to impart the same knowledge. And therefore, there is no difference whether he speaks or I speak, or some of our other God brothers or other members of our institution speak. We all belong to the same institution. We all are recipient of the same wisdom. And this information is about, as he was pointing out, is about the spiritual reality. And the information about that reality is not generally available, nor can we approach that reality by means of our own endeavor, because that reality is beyond our sense perception. So to make that point clear, I'll just try to make some simple points for clarification. We see that in the world around us, there are two types of objects, two types of things. One is inert matter, and the other is living entities. Like, there are many objects in this room. Let's consider this chairs, this wall, the floor, this building. They are all inert matter. Whereas we all, although our body is made of inert matter, but we all are conscious. We all are living. Now, what causes this difference between inert and living? For example, now I'm talking to you, and you all are thinking that here he is speaking to us. Now, if I drop dead, my body will be lying here, but you will say he is gone. Although my body will be lying here, you will say that he is gone. Now, who is that he who is gone? Obviously, not my body, but the one who made this inert body alive. Actually, this body is made of matter, just as this chair or this platform, the floor. Now, what's the difference between this body and that body? The difference is that this body is alive, this body is conscious. Now, what makes this body alive? You have seen dead bodies. What's the difference between a dead body and a living body? The difference is that a living body has a soul in it, whereas a dead body is devoid of the soul. When the soul leaves the body becomes dead. Then that body and the chair are all the inert objects. There is no difference. That body is an inert body. That means a dead body. Now that soul that makes the body alive and function in such a wonderful way, is it important, is it necessary to understand about that, the characteristics, the nature of that soul? Now, we cannot possibly understand the nature of the soul. We cannot even possibly recognize the existence of the soul unless and until somebody comes and reminds us or makes us aware of that. Otherwise, we generally tend to take it for granted that yes, the body is alive. But why the body is alive? Why the body functions in such an amazing way, we do not really tend to even probe into it. Now the information about that is available. Now that is what Jagat Purush Prabhu was talking about. The information about the soul comes from the spiritual reality, where the soul originally comes from. The soul is, take it from me, please, that the soul is not a matter of chemical combinations. Life did not evolve from chemical combination. Those who are claiming that the life evolved from some chemical combination in certain temperature and pressure, in some specific condition, is not real, is not true. If it is, if life evolved from matter, if life is a product of some chemical combination, then show me a single example that where life has evolved from a chemical combination. Our laboratories are there, all the chemicals are there, all the scientists are there. Then why did not they create life from chemicals so far? I can very boldly declare, even I can even challenge that they will never be able to produce life out of chemical combinations. Life will never evolve from chemicals. Just consider how impossible it is. Let us not even go to that extent of the creation of human beings and so forth. Take a simple thing like a small little seed of a plant. Say, a small little seed of an apple. That seed falls on the ground, a tree comes out of it. In that tree, there are many apples. In those apples, there are many seeds. And in each seed, there is a tree. And in those trees, there are innumerable apples with innumerable seeds. And in those seeds, there are innumerable apple trees. Now tell me, is it virtually possible for anyone to create something like that? That is the simple common sense understanding that we have to establish. We have to accept. Let us not get into the complexities of the bodies like human bodies. Like just a simple organ, a kidney, is filtering 200 liters of blood every day in 24 hours. And it's continuously doing it without any difficulty. Now, if you want to make it happen make an artificial arrangement like that, then I can tell you, like, you will need a huge factory which will run about 2 miles. Anyway, let us not get into that. The point that I'm simply trying to make is, let us understand that there is a difference between a dead body and a living body. There's a difference between dead matter and living body, living entity. Now, what makes the living body alive? The presence of the soul. Now, if we consider that it is important to understand the nature of the soul, then we have to get the informations about that. Now those informations are available. Those informations are coming from, originally it came from the spiritual sky. The Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself imparted the knowledge. And that knowledge is flowing through a chain of disciplic succession. Disciplic succession means teacher to student. Teacher imparts the knowledge to the student. Then student, in course of time, becomes a teacher and imparts that knowledge to his student. Then that student becomes a teacher in course of time and imparts the knowledge to his students. And in this way, through an unbroken chain of teachers and students, which is called the disciplic succession, this knowledge is flowing. Personally, I can honestly admit that I was in total ignorance. I was like anybody else. I was thinking that the goal of life is to become successful in making money and having a successful career and a happy life and so forth. And a time came when I realized the futility of that. That I realized, fortunately, that cannot be the goal of my life. Life is meant for something more precious, more elevated. And I was in Europe, I was in Germany. And before I went to Europe, I used to think that West is the best, and if I go to the West, and then my life will be successful. But when I went to the West, I saw that this is also not exactly what I was hankering for. And fortunately, at that time, I became interested about Indian philosophy and India's spiritual culture. And then I realized that I have to now go back to India in search of my spiritual life. So I went back to India, and fortunately I came across my spiritual master, about whom Jagat Purush Prabhu just mentioned, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Incidentally, I also can mention that when I went to India, I thought that as soon as I go back to India, I'll find a guru and he will take me to my spiritual life. But when I went back to India, then I couldn't find a guru. I met many so-called spiritualists, but I did not feel that here is a person to whom I can surrender myself. And at a time when I was practically thinking of giving up my search for my spiritual teacher, my guru, then fortunately I came across a book written by Srila Prabhupada. And while reading that book, from the very first page, it occurred to me that this is what I was actually searching for. And the thing that actually impressed me, as I mentioned, from the very first page, were two things. One is that I was thinking that the liberation was the goal of life. And at that very first page, Prabhupada mentioned about five kinds of liberations, which I was not even aware of. And I could see that, and he pointed out that one kind of liberation is negative and other four kinds of liberation are positives. There was such a distinct understanding, a clear understanding about liberation. It completely amazed me. All this while I was aspiring for liberation, but here he gave me a very, very clear and definite understanding about liberation. And of that, one is a negative liberation, which is not actually desirable. That kind of liberation is not desirable. But there are four different other kinds of liberations, which are positive liberation. And those positive liberations are in direct connections with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then he made this point clear, that God is a person. God is a person. He is the supreme person. He is the supreme controller. He is the supreme proprietor. And that supreme personality, who is the supreme controller and supreme proprietor and supreme creator, he is our dearmost friend. He is our supreme father. So these two points brought such clarity that it convinced me that this is what I was actually searching for. And then it didn't take me very long to submit myself, to surrender myself to him. That happened when I was in India, and Srila Prabhupada was in America at that time. And then Srila Prabhupada went back. When he went back to India, I had the good fortune of meeting him. And I had the good fortune of being with him for practically 24 hours a day. He very mercifully allowed me to be with him and serve him personally. And now, the informations about the spiritual reality that he gave is so relevant, so appropriate, so profound, and so genuine, that although at the beginning I came with an intention that, well, I'll give it a try for about 2 months and let me see. For example, when we take to this path, we shave our head. And I thought, okay, I mean, if I don't like it, in 2 months' time, my hair will grow and I can leave if I wanted to. But I tell you, that 2 months never ended. So, And not only that, with the passing of time, the conviction is becoming stronger and stronger. I've been on this path for last 34 years, and it is becoming stronger and stronger with greater and greater realizations. Spiritual reality, although it is beyond our sense perception, but it is perceivable first with our intelligence and then with our awareness of it, the realization of the facts that the soul is there. We become aware of it every moment. Like in this respect, I'll make some simple points. First, about God. Unfortunately, in today's world, most of the people do not even have the time to consider whether God is there, if He is there, who He is. And oftentimes we see that a kind of an atheistic mentality actually prevails. But those who do not want to accept the existence of God, those who don't want to believe in God, I'll make a simple, intelligent, common sense approach. Like if I ask you, the watch that you're wearing, did someone make them? The glasses that you're wearing, did someone make them? What will be your answer? Naturally, yes. You may not know who made it, but at least your common sense will compel you to accept that somebody must have made it. So in this way, when you look around everything, we have to accept that somebody must have made them. Now when it comes to this wonderful creation, this world, and these wonderful planetary systems, so many stars and planets in the sky, maintaining such a beautiful order. And then when you ask, did somebody make them? What will be our honest reply to that? If I say that your watch nobody made, it fell from the sky, or there was a primordial soup and from that soup came the watch, will anybody accept it? You will laugh at me, you'll ridicule me if I say something like that. But when it comes to this wonderful creation that is maintaining such a beautiful order, how can our intelligence admit that it came from an accidental phenomenon? From accident you never get chaos, you never get order. From accident you always get chaos. One American philosopher, Will Durant, commented that the theory that creation came out of accident is as absurd as saying that there was an accident in a printing press and there was an explosion in a printing press and the types got types fell in such an order after getting blown up that the Webster dictionary was printed. So from accident we never get order, from accident we only get chaos. But is there any chaos in the world around us? If there is any chaos, that chaos is made by man only. Otherwise nature maintains a beautiful order. Now who is maintaining that order? There must be somebody. I may not know about him, but he is there. That an intelligent person have to honestly admit. And as I said, that information about him is available. How? He himself gave those information at the time of creation. Like when you buy a machine, when you buy an apparatus, along with that comes an operation manual, how to run the machine, how to handle the machine. Similarly, when this creation was created, when this nature was created, when this universe was created, at that time, the Creator, the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, He gave the operation manual. And that operation manual is called the Vedas. The word Vedas in Sanskrit means knowledge. Knowledge about this nature and also the knowledge about the nature which lies beyond this nature. This is the material nature. This is the nature of matter. But beyond this world of matter, nature of matter, there is another reality. That is the nature of spiritual reality, known as the spiritual sky, or you can say kingdom of God. Kingdom of God, where God, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, resides along with His associates. There God is not alone. God is with His associates. An important person, the more important a person is, greater is the number of his entourage and associates. So now consider the greatest personality. Why should he be alone? He must be surrounded by innumerable associates. Now those associates are called the spirit souls or living entities. We are his parts and parcels. And as parts and parcels, we can actually exist in two ways, in two different ways. We can exist in a free state, or we can be in an imprisoned state or conditioned state. Now those who are in the material nature, they are in that conditioned state due to their becoming separated from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the Supreme Spirit. And when we are connected to Him, then we also remain in our spiritual identity. But when you become separated from Him, then we come to this material nature and become bound by this material nature. We become materialized. We literally become materialized. Originally, we are spiritual. But coming to this material nature, we became materialized. That is, although we are spiritual, but we are identifying ourselves with our bodies. In this respect, I'll mention a very simple philosophical phenomena, which has been exemplified through an example, that the fire and spark. A spark is fire. Only as long as it is in connection with fire. When the spark comes out of the fire, what happens to the spark? The spark becomes extinguished. And it falling onto a heap of ash, it becomes ash. It was actually fire as a spark, but coming out of fire, it lost its fiery qualities. And falling into the heap of ash, now it has become ash. Similarly, we are minute spiritual entities, like spiritual sparks. When we become isolated, from the Lord, by losing our connection with Him, then we lose our spiritual qualities, And falling into matter, we start to identify ourselves with matter. Although we are spiritual, but we lost our spiritual identity and spiritual qualities. Now if, again, this spark, a speck of inflammable speck, if it has to become spark again, how can it become spark again? Simply by being connected to the fire. Take that back into fire, what will happen? It will become fire again. So similarly, when we develop our relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Spiritual Personality, we regain our spiritual identity. So when we are in connection with the Lord, when we are related to the Lord, then we are spiritual, in our free spiritual condition. But when we become isolated from Him, then we fall into this material nature, which is His external energy, and we become, we lose our spiritual identity and we become bound by matter. All the informations are there. We can go on for hours together, but I'm simply trying to make a simplified presentation of these facts. And obviously, I do not hope that this will be our last get together. This will be our last connection or last contact. I would rather consider that this is the beginning and we can continue further to get more and more informations about it. It's an endless information that are available. The simple consideration is to understand the difference between matter and spirit. We have to understand that the spirit is diametrically opposed to matter. Spirit is so spiritual that it even converts matter into spirit. It makes matter, inert matter, alive with the qualities of the spirit soul. Consciousness is not a product of matter. Consciousness comes from the spirit soul. But because of the presence of the soul in the body, this body made of matter became conscious. Now the next point is that the soul originally comes from the spiritual sky. There is another reality beyond this material nature, and the souls came from that spiritual nature. And in that spiritual nature, everything is conscious. And in that spiritual nature, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the center, and everybody else exists in relation to Him. Everyone's consciousness is projected to Him, and that state of consciousness is called God consciousness or Krishna consciousness. Because Krishna is the name of God, meaning the all-attractive Supreme Personality. God is one without a second. He is the Supreme Personality. And He has many names according to His qualities and activities. Just like in Latin also you're familiar, God is identified as omnipotent. Omnipotent, meaning all-powerful. Who is all-powerful? He is all-powerful. So it is a description of His quality. He is all-powerful, therefore this is a name of God. He is omnipotent. He is omniscient. He is omnipresent. So God is omnipotent. He is omniscient. He is omnipresent. And these are His names. Similarly, in Sanskrit, Krishna means all-attractive. And this all-attractive feature of the Lord, because He is all-attractive, it's the most appealing aspect of Him. He is all-attractive. And if we become properly exposed to Him, then we will naturally become attracted to Him. And that attraction is the ultimate goal of our existence. Because when we become attracted to Him, then we become connected to Him. And then we regain our spiritual identity and spiritual qualities. Now this attraction and love are synonymous. Therefore, we are meant to love Him. And when we love Him, then our existence becomes perfect, because by doing that, we re-establish our lost connection with Him. And these are the important informations that comes from the Vedas, imparted by the Lord Himself at the time of creation. And then again, from time to time, He comes here to impart this knowledge. Like 5,000 years ago, He appeared and He spoke Bhagavad Gita, giving the same informations. What I am just speaking now is the informations that is there in Bhagavad Gita, which the Lord imparted 5,000 years ago. And these informations are also transmitted by His representatives. And these representatives of the Lord are the spiritual teachers. Those who impart the spiritual knowledge are the representatives of God or the spiritual masters or spiritual teachers. Spiritual master is not a superman, or one doesn't have to be a superman to be a spiritual master. He simply have to know who God is, and he should be capable of imparting the knowledge to others. That is the only qualification. And that is exactly what Jagat Purush Prabhu, Mr. Meshark, I'm sorry, many of you know him as Mr. Meshark, and he was speaking about. This knowledge is coming down since time immemorial through a chain of disciplic succession, and this knowledge is still available. Anyone who is interested can receive this knowledge. Today what I am trying to do is just to give you some basic information as an introduction to this topic. And if you want to go deeper into it, there are books here. We have Prabhupada, our spiritual master, wrote many, many books, more than 85 volumes of books Srila Prabhupada wrote. And these books are actually imparting the spiritual knowledge in a very simple way. He wrote them in English because English was the most popular language, most prominent language of this world. And in this way he is distributing this knowledge, and he is still available. These informations are still available through his books. So if you want, you can take his books. There's no need to take the big books. I'll suggest you can take some small books, introductory books. They're also available. Generally, I recommend one book called The Perfect Question, Perfect Answer. One Peace Corps worker in India, Bob Cohen, he met Srila Prabhupada in the early 70s. And the questions that he asked and the answers that Prabhupada gave are so perfect that they're printed in a book titled as The Perfect Question, Perfect Answers. And then if you want to go further, you can take Bhagavad Gita. And on top of everything, please stay in touch with us. Like if you feel these informations are important to receive, if you feel there is any need to receive these informations, receive this knowledge, we'll be happy to help you, because we have seen the benefit of receiving this knowledge. Therefore, we're extremely eager to distribute this knowledge to whoever wants to receive them. And now I will ask if anybody has any question, please feel free to ask. Yes, Jagdish.
Marge, for those people perhaps in the audience and elsewhere who might be very committed to a particular path, would there be any contradiction between one path and another, and would this knowledge that you're referring to be applicable in say another spiritual discipline?
Yes. You see, the different paths actually naturally imply that understanding about God. Like religions have to have one common factor, is God. Can you switch it off? Yes. I'll just... Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Mainly because it's making a humming noise. And... you see, religions speak about God. And religions show the way to approach Him, the way to understand Him, and way to develop a connection with Him. And you will notice that all bona fide religions in this world accept that God is one. And in reality, God is one. He is the Supreme Personality. So supreme naturally means one without any equal, right? So if all the religions are speaking about that one supreme personality of Godhead and showing the way to approach Him, understand Him, and reestablish a connection with Him, then there cannot be many religions. There is only one religion. Maybe there are identifying God by different names, and they may have developed in different geographical considerations or social consideration, but actually, in essence, all the religions are the same. So there is no contradiction. So, again, I'll go back to Srila Prabhupada's one example. Probably you also are aware of it. Once, when Prabhupada was in America, he was in New York. Some reporters were interviewing him. No, I'm sorry. Not the reporters. Some Roman Catholic priests were meeting with Srila Prabhupada. At one point they asked Prabhupada, "Why are you converting these Christian boys and girls into Hindus?" Prabhupada said, "No, I'm not converting the Christians into Hindus or Jews into Muslims. I'm simply making better Christians out of the Christians, better Jews out of the Jews, better Muslims out of the Muslims, and better Hindus out of the Hindus. For myself, at least, I can say I was born in a Hindu family, but I didn't know what Hindu religion was until I came across Srila Prabhupada. And today I can say that I have become a real Hindu. At the same time, I can say that today I have become an earnest follower of Jesus Christ. Because what did he speak about? God the Father. And how to love Him. And same thing Srila Prabhupada is speaking about. God the Father. The Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now the subject may have different levels of understanding. But that's different. But actually the path is the same. So there is no contradiction. In a similar note, I can ask you, probably you came from Christian background, so was there any conflict with your Christianity and what you are following today?
No, in fact, I think...
you become a better Christian.
Yeah.
Because today you are closer to Jesus Christ and you understand Him much better than you did before. Because the information about Jesus Christ and God the Father was not clear to you before, as it has become today. Yes?
The question, Guruji, is as one gets born in the world with all the materialistic, is it easier to relinquish all this thing to be connected to the Supreme Personality? Yes, one has to go through extremity of relinquishing everything to achieve Him?
No. No. As you see, you just before that, you just mentioned that relinquish everything to offer it to Him. No, you don't relinquish. You offer it to Him. There's no question of relinquishing. Because He is the Lord and you are His servant. Right? What does a servant do? Whatever he has, he uses it in the service of the Master. And especially when he recognizes that everything belongs to his Master, then where's the question of relinquishing anything? Everything belongs to Him. So engage everything in His service for His pleasure. To begin with, nothing belongs to us. So where's the question of relinquishing? Everything belongs to Him. So let us offer everything to Him by engaging everything in His service, in His pleasure. And by doing that, you are becoming engaged. There is no need to give up anything, but positively engage everything in its actual purpose. Right? Yes?
We hear about, the term practicing a Christian, practicing Muslim, practicing Hindu. In your opinion, practicing Hindu, what should he or he be doing?
Practicing Hindu, what I'm doing today. That's what I was actually trying to point out. You see, He is the Supreme Lord, He is the Supreme Father, right? And in that, if He is the Supreme Lord, then who am I in relation to Him? If He is the Supreme Master, I am His servant. So my business is to serve Him. If He is my Supreme Father, who am I? His son, His child. Now, as a good child, what am I supposed to do? Be obedient to the Father and try to please the Father and act according to His instructions. That's what I'm trying to do.
Would you also consider, when you talk about relationship with the Supreme, you talked about it as a father and son relationship. Would you think that relationship could be a friendly relationship? Could you consider the Supreme as a friend?
Yeah, yeah. You see, when you analyze relationships, positive relationships, there are, first is the neutral relationship, then servitorship, then friendship, then parental, then conjugal. These are the five positive relationships. Like, to give an example, like, you know that somebody is there in the neighborhood. You know that he is there, but you do not have any exchange with him. You see that person goes to the office and comes back and on the weekends works in the garden, mows the lawn, and so forth. You know that he is there, or she is there, but you don't really have any kind of relationship as such. So that is neutrality. You are neither negatively disposed to him or positively. Neutral. Now, say you have a servant at home. Now your relationship with the servant is more intimate than with that neighbor. Right? Then your relationship with your friends are more intimate than with the servant. Your relationship with your parents is more intimate than with your friends. And the relationship between husband and wife is more intimate than the relationship with the parents. So these are the five kinds of relationship. And these five kinds of relationships can be established with the Lord. Like, initially we start off as His servant. Now, if He is pleased with our service, then He can accept us as His friend. Right? Then he in friendship, it's equal. But in parental, the parents are superior and the subject is inferior. So in that relationship, the devotees of the Lord become superior to the Lord and the Lord becomes subservient to them. That is the parental. And then conjugal is like a relationship between lover and beloved. So all these five kinds of relationships are possible with the Lord. But it's up to Him what kind of relationship He will eventually award. On our part, we start off with servitorship. We become His servant. Then whatever relationship He wants to offer us, or in whichever way He wants to accept us, that's up to Him. So all these relationships are possible with the Lord. That's why He is considered to be, these relationships are called mellow. And the Lord is considered to be the reservoir of all mellow. Rasaraj.
I could just say, Guruji, one more thing, expanding upon your explanation. Does that mean that relationship, the most, utmost to the highest level, is the right one, or each of them has its own
pace? Good point. Yes. Yeah. You see, the each relationship is absolute. Only from a marginal point when you see it, you can see that one appears to be higher than the other. But the one who is situated, like those who are in servitorship, he thinks that service to the Lord, to be the servant of the Lord, is the ultimate goal. Those who are in friendship, they are thinking that friend, to be the friend of the Lord is the, this relationship is the ultimate. There is nothing superior to that. This is the highest. Those who are the parents of the Lord, those who are in parental relationship, they think that that is the highest. And in there, because everyone is focused to the Lord, there is no room for I want this or I want that. Whatever, there the consideration is the way the Lord wants, that is the way I'm going to react. From marginal consideration, there are different grades, you can say. But in the absolute platform, everyone thinks that my relationship with the Lord is the highest. I do not want anything else. Yes?
So how do we get separated?
Oh, very good point. Very good question. Yeah. Well, it's difficult to intellectually grasp that because it all happened there in the spiritual sky. So probably only when you go back we'll find out why and how we got separated. But at the same time we can make some intellectual consideration. Like, you see, we are very tiny and our consciousness is very, very minute. It's like a ray of light. A ray. Just one ray. That is our consciousness. A ray of consciousness. Now, to how many points a ray can be projected at one time? Just one point. So, our consciousness can either be projected towards the Lord or away from the Lord. Now,
one thing that's away from the Lord.
Away from the Lord, yeah. The thing is, either we can look towards the Lord or we can look away from Him. That option.
What is away? What is one thing that is away from God?
Away. That's what I'm saying. I'm coming to that. See, when we are looking at the Lord, we are with Him.
Yes.
But when we turn our face away from Him.
But you can't.
But it happened. Okay.
I And I think the concern is that the Lord is everywhere.
I was coming to that. Yeah. So, you see, towards the Lord is Lord's internal energy, and away from the Lord is Lord's external energy. Right? So, when we turn our face away from Him, we are actually looking at His external energy. This material nature. That is His separated energy, His inferior energy, His external energy. This energy is inferior. And we are coming from a superior nature of the Lord. So when the superior comes across inferior, then he naturally develops a tendency to lord over, to dominate. So that's what happened to us. Coming here, we developed an attitude that we are the Lord and Master of everything, and we are trying to control everything. And that is called the false ego, the mistaken identity, a misconception of our identity, false identity. That gives us the first covering. Then we get the second covering of intelligence, through which we try to plan how we are going to control this nature, how we are going to enjoy this nature. And then the third concept is, or natural phenomena is, then our consciousness flows constantly towards this material direction through the mind. So in this way, through false ego, intelligence and mind, we get a subtle covering. These are matter. These are actually matter. Mind is matter, intelligence is matter, false ego is matter, but subtle matter. With this we develop a subtle body. And according to the subtle body, we get a gross body, which is this, made of five gross elements: earth, water, fire, air, and ether. For our earth, water, fire, air, and ether. So, again, these informations are coming from the source, the Vedas, which has been imparted by the Lord and which is flowing through an unbroken chain of disciplic succession. Now, I'll go back one step here. As you said, how can we look away from the Lord? Right? But that is our state of existence now. We are looking away from the Lord. But at least we can try to look towards Him. I may not know how I became separated from Him. But at least now I can make an endeavor to become connected to Him. That option I have. How we become separated is not important. How we can become connected to Him, that is what really matters. How we looked away from Him, it's not important. But at least now we can look towards Him. What is stopping us? And that is what we have to consider. Okay, so, yes, Mr. Saul.
Going back to the beginning, you made a really nice presentation about animate objects and inanimate objects, and the difference between them. Then toward the end, you started talking about the names, the mantra that we were singing.
Yeah.
So you made the distinction, there's so many inanimate objects here. Mentioned the chairs and then the animate objects like us, and you started to point it out, maybe you did actually say it, but the mantra, these names actually are animate. Is that what you're saying?
The mantra?
The names of God are animate.
Yeah, God Himself. God's name is non-different from God Himself, because in that absolute platform, the name and the personality are non-different. And that is the nature of the spiritual reality. Whereas in the material nature, the matter and the object and the name are different. Like the chair, the name, and the chair itself are two different things. The chair name does not become, the name itself doesn't become the object. Whereas in the spiritual nature, the name of the Lord is Lord Himself. Yeah. And actually you brought up a very good point in that respect. Like, yes, the Lord's name is non-different from Him, and that name, that mantra actually came down from the spiritual sky as the mercy of the Lord. And by, through the mantra, we can actually associate with Him. Through the mantra, we can have Him. And, well, I mean, if we go into the Vedic source, then again, you can see Vedas are so profound, so specific, so precise. See, Vedas are making this point that sound, there are two types of sounds. Meaningless sound and meaningful sound. Right? Like say, this sound doesn't convey any meaning. Or blah, blah, blah doesn't convey any meaning. But when I say chair, it's a meaningful sound. It gives the impression of the of some objects. Microphone. So these are the meaningful sounds. Then we come to the sound that descends from the spiritual world. The mantras are actually sounds that are descending from the spiritual world. And those mantras or the sound of the spiritual world, spiritual reality, carries the same object of the spiritual reality. That is the difference between ordinary sound and mantra. Mantras are not ordinary sound. Mantras are not material sound. It's a spiritual sound that's coming from the spiritual sky, revealing different spiritual objects. And ultimately, it is revealing the Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself through His names. They are the names of the Lord, and the name and the personality of Godhead are non-different. And these sounds, these mantras are not man-made. They are coming down from the spiritual sky, and that's why there is a need for a disciplic succession. One who has them, in part, gives it to some qualified candidate. And by establishing the connection with the mantra, one becomes eligible to go back to the spiritual world. Or in simple words, we can say, the pure chanting of the mantra reveals the spiritual sky to him. And at that time, he finds himself in the spiritual sky. So that is the potency of the mantra. Mantra is chanted. The chanting can be pure or impure. As long as the chanting is impure, that means we are there are material contaminations are affecting the chanting. That's impure chanting. But when it is free from all material contaminations and defects and inebrieties, then it is pure chanting. And the pure chanting reveals the spiritual object to us. And revelation of the spiritual object is non-different from becoming transported to the spiritual world.
I've been chanting for a long time.
Thank you. Well, and ultimately it is the will of the Lord. He knows when He wants to take us back. We cannot force our way to way there. And as long as we are here, we simply try to serve Him. We simply try to execute His mission. And that's why He keeps us here. As long as we are here, let's just continue to serve Him. And in course of time, when He wants, He can take us back. To be surrendered to Him means to be subservient to His will. Meaning, whenever he wants, he will do. Now if he wants us to be here, let's be here. What's the harm?
Could you explain how we can get from the impure chanting to the pure chanting?
Well, the impurities are actually our contaminations of the material nature, our identification with the material nature. These are the impurities. That means, you see, the soul is there, but the soul is affected by matter. Right? The first is the subtle body, then the gross body, then the objects around us and our attachment to them. Now, when, as we continue to render spiritual activities, service to the Lord, then the soul begins to become free, or rather soul begins to acquire its spiritual qualities and simultaneously becoming free from its material influences, material bondage. So through the spiritual practice, which means devotional service to the Lord, as we continue to render service to the Lord, our material covering, our material attachments begins to wear off, and our spiritual qualities begin to manifest. And in this way, when the soul becomes completely free from material bondage and shines in its spiritual identity, that at that stage we are able to chant the pure name of the Lord. So it's a matter of, you know, practicing the process properly. And in course of time it will happen if we practice it properly. The process is perfect. Now the consideration is that how we are practicing the process, how we are utilizing the process. And it will happen. Okay, so now maybe we can chant the holy name of the Lord for a few minutes, and then we have some prasad, the remnants, the mercy of the Lord has come down in the form of food. So we'll partake to that.